So we can read something from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is 5th canto, chapter 24, text 26. Tasya manu bhavasyanu patamam rijaka shaya kuvasmat vidaha parihina bhagavatanugraha upaji gamishatiti. Tasya of Prahlad Maharaj. Mahanubhavasya, who was an exalted devotee. Anupatam, the path. Amrijakushayaha, a person who is materially contaminated. Kaha, what? Va, or. Asmatvidaha, like us. Parihina bhagavata anugraha, being without the favor of the supreme personality of Godhead. Upajigamishati, desires to follow. Iti, thus. Translation: Bali Maharaj said, persons like us, who are still attached to material enjoyment, who are contaminated by the modes of material nature, and who lack the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot follow the supreme path of Prahlad Maharaj, the exalted devotee of the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said that for spiritual realization one must follow the great personalities like Lord Brahma, Devarshin Radha, Lord Shiva and Prahlad Maharaj. The path of bhakti is not at all difficult if we follow in the footsteps of previous acharyas and authorities. But those who are too materially contaminated by the modes of material nature cannot follow them. Also, Bali Maharaj was actually following the path of his grandfather because of his great humility. He saw that he was not. It is characteristics of advanced Vaishnavas following the principles of bhakti that they think themselves ordinary human beings. This is not an artificial exhibition of humility. A Vaishnava sincerely thinks this way and therefore never admits his exalted position. Bali Maharaj said, persons like us who are still attached to material enjoyment, who are contaminated by the modes of material nature, and who lack the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot follow the supreme path of Prahlad Maharaj, the exalted devotee of the Lord. Now, we can learn a lot from this shloka. Bali Maharaj was by no means that less advanced as he is describing himself. But it is natural if one starts to understand the level of conditioning one is on and the impact of the material energy, how we are covered, then it is natural that knowledge derived this way can result in humility. That's the first word Krishna is using by describing knowledge. There are many symptoms of knowledge, you find them in the Bhagavad Gita, and the first one is humility. But as Prabhupada points out, it is not that kind of artificial humility. It is a true humility. It's not an artificial exhibition of humility. It is a real humility derived from the knowledge that just the very same fact we are placed in this circumstance. It's not accidental. It is real that we are in this body, which is, you know, accumulation of the most actually obnoxious ingredients. Just imagine somebody will have a nice sleeping bag for you tonight prepared. A bag. Inside is flesh, mucus, stool, cells, a little bit saliva, you know, and they say, have a nice rest. You know, you would probably never go to sleep like this. But we are living in such a bag, 24 hours a day, day and night, and we think, oh, so nice. You know, besides the fact that it's temporary. But it's actually, you know, when we cut a little bit into this whole thing, then we immediately need some plaster and we put something around, and you know, and people have to paint it and, you know, and cover it up. But the sense of beauty is so amazing. Just from the demigod's point of view, if you would take it to the heavenly planets, you look at this body, the demigods will conceive us something like on the level of pigs, you know. It's just the demigod bodies are so exalted, you know. Why to speak of spiritual bodies? So just that alone, that empiric observation, can lead to a certain level of introspection. Prabhupada once exhibited such a humility when he said, when there were this classical question, what were you in previous lifetime? Prabhupada said, a fool. The proof is that I'm now here. It was very quick. Quick astrology. What were you in previous lifetime? A fool. Because now I am here. That's the proof. And of course we know Srila Prabhupada's position being quite different, but that's natural when you think like this, you know, when you have some introspection. So Bali Maharaj exhibiting here, pointing out to superiors, and that means seniors. That word senior is also to be understood scientifically. We know from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, from Lord Kapiladev, being the son of the Vahudev, that he is actually lecturing to his mother, which normally children shouldn't do. Of course now they do it all the time, but you know, but this is not the etiquette, it's not the standard. But he is actually lecturing to his mother, so wonderful, it's all recorded in Bhagavatam. Why? Well, first of all, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is superior in knowledge. That's where the seniority comes. It's not the age of the body. There are enough old fools walking in this world around. Actually, as a matter of fact, old age offers a wonderful opportunity to be stupid. You know, generally, you know, that's one of the reasons why young people are not willing to listen from old people, because actually very often they are just stupid. What did they do? Eating, sleeping, mating and defending for 90 years doesn't make you elevated. You know, this is just, what did they do? But in a classical sense, a senior person should exhibit senior detachment, senior knowledge, and senior taste too. This is what Srila Prabhupada showed us. He was on the level, I mean physically spoken, he could be the grandfather of most of his disciples. Not the father, the grandfather. And still he had to show to these hippies how to dance in ecstasy and be happy and have some taste. Because the looking at the, as Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, my disciples didn't look very happy before they joined this movement. Rather very morose. You know what makes you miserable? It's speculation. And that makes you very miserable and very old too. You know, it's, you can see, you can look at the photos. You know, the hippies were saying, I'm happy. When you see a happy hippie, that means he's intoxicated. Otherwise, a very miserable crew. This was actually, anyway, I don't want to go now in detail, but there was one Czech filmmaker, very famous filmmaker. He wanted to make a film about hippies, so he went to America. You know, and he thought this was very progressive and there will be a, it should be a really exciting movie. And he came back reporting, I never saw such a crew of depressed and boring people. They were sleeping the whole day. At night they woke up just to intoxicate themselves more, and then they went to sleep again. You know, how do you make a movie out of this? Who's going to watch such a movie? Just people sleeping and then going to sleep again. That's actually was the essence, the hippie times. It looked like something very progressive, but actually confused, speculative, you know. Of course, there was ideas which we find, you know, therefore in Krishna consciousness, people lived in communities, people were living, ready to give up the old values. Yeah, but so any drunkard on the street is giving up the old values too, you know. He goes, I don't care for name, fame and glory. You know. Yeah, he's also progressive in this regard. So this is not very inspiring. So Prabhupada had to show, look, that's how you are happy. That's how you are dance. That's how you chant. And they were like, I have to think about it. Prabhupada said, no, not thinking, chanting. So of course we do some thinking, but thinking did you ever saw a happy mental person? It's impossible. I have to think about it once more. He walks even back and forth like pendulum because the mind is sankalpa and vikalpa. So it goes, maybe, it could be, should be, maybe. It could be, maybe, should be, maybe. You know, it takes you around like this. So how do you become happy in ignorance? It's not possible. So this is what Prabhupada brought us, and that's called senior. Senior in knowledge and senior in bliss, a real bliss. So this is actually senior. If you find somebody who is so depressed he almost commits suicide, you know, then that's not senior. How did he get so depressed? You know. So Prabhupada, if you consider the problems he had to deal with, the pressure, the management, the movement growing around him, and still Prabhupada, well, it's not like he was always smiling. Krishna is also not like that. You know, one artist, he painted painting of Krishna describing how he is moaning when his father, an illusory form of his father, was killed. You find the story in Krishna book. It was actually illusion. But Krishna exhibited moaning, my father got just killed. So some artist had painted it how Krishna is moaning. Prabhupada said, what is this? He said, well, it's written here, Krishna is sad, Krishna is moaning, so I painted that. Prabhupada said, that's okay, but Krishna is not looking like this when he is moaning. He's always ecstatic. So he is always happy. So that's why he's happy moaning, you know? So he had to paint it like this is not known in a material world. We don't know this. This material world is such a depressing place that it's easy to become sad and discouraged. But Krishna is never discouraged and he's never sad in this way. And then Prabhupada showed the same symptoms. Of course, he was tense and he was struggling. But even in that struggle, there was ecstasy. Because it was all for Krishna. Otherwise, of course, to smile all the time, you know. Well, there are certain people who do that. But they are called mentally retarded. You know, naturally, sometimes we get all the emotions which are experienced, tensity, and I just read a testimony. There's a statement of Shastra. Actually, devotee asked Prabhupada why Prabhupada was fighting this demon so intensely. And Prabhupada said, no, Krishna was envious. He was going, what? Krishna can become envious? Prabhupada said, of course. In a perfect form. He's perfectly envious. You know, yeah. So he shows a perfect anger on that person. I will kill you. You know, and he's perfectly envious. So there is no emotion we experience which is not in Krishna. Otherwise, where is our emotion coming from? We are part of Krishna. But everything in Krishna is in a perfect form. Anger, enviousness, you know, all this. Jealousy, even, you know. And even you find quite a human, you know, notions. Krishna is showing off in front of his wife. Krishna is the perfect macho, You know, yeah. Yeah, I can do that. You want a Parijata flower? I will get it. And if this Indra makes a complaint, I will kill him. You know, it's like, you know. So this is all in Krishna. But in a perfect form and always full of knowledge, full of bliss and eternal. That's always the three qualities you find. And we always are full of ignorance, miserable and temporary. This is what we are struggling with here. The incoming misery, the incoming frustration, and that's what we're actually always facing. So Krishna consciousness is a conscious endeavor to abstain from these qualities, to raise above them. They are there, but to raise above, that's what we are trying all the time. So therefore a devotee always has this tendency when something becomes too tense, then always seek some knowledge through Guru, Shastra and Sadhu. These are three channels where the inspiration can come in. So you can see if a devotee thinks, would my spiritual master be pleased like that if I would do that? That's already a heavy regulation. And that's automatically a elevate. That's how you realize a bona fide guru. You come in touch with a bona fide guru, you'll automatically be raised over these lower qualities. That's a proof, practical proof. When a reporter asked Prabhupada if he can do some magic, because you know, gurus coming from India were always demonstrating some magic, Prabhupada merely pointed to his disciple and said, "This is my magic." And they were all, "Jai, Prabhupada." Because it is incredible, it is impossible almost to lift up somebody from these modes of nature. And that's Bali Maharaj is in a very mood of introspectiveness describing it. He said, we who are attached to material enjoyment, contaminated by modes of material nature, and above all, who lack the mercy of the Supreme Personality of God. Now Krishna is always willing. Krishna is always merciful. But the question is, are we willing? Can we take what Krishna is willing to give? Are we ready? Or do we want that? You know, when Prabhupada was always challenged, "Can you show me God?" Prabhupada said, "What will you do with him?" No answer. Yeah. So, what will you do with him? So why should Krishna reveal himself to somebody who doesn't want, actually, doesn't want him? So this is, Krishna says, as you surrender unto me, I will reveal myself to you. So, this is what, you know, what we can learn from this. Derive inspiration from truly senior, you know, Vaishnavas. Truly senior. Not designated. This is not a world of names only. This movement is not made for that. This movement is, you know, Bhagavatam says, this is the world of names only. Everything has a designation. And in Kali Yuga, oh, that's really, you know, there are champions in designations. You know, there is no more simple, previously, like example, people had trades. You know, and there was a guy who was making shoes, he was a shoemaker. And his grandfather was shoemaker, and his father was shoemaker, and they did perfect shoes. You know. And another one, he was making furniture, he was, you know, a carpenter. So he could make a chair you could use for generations. Not the IKEA, you know, things. You know, it's just, you know. And he was proud of it. Prabhupada said furniture was of such a quality previously that you could inherit it. And it was an investment. If there was lack of money, you could sell some chairs and then, you know, and then you had more money. Today you can drive the chair to the garbage heap. That's it. So, you know, so everything was kind of had a value. And it was trades, you know. And he was famous for being, you know, expert in this field, but it was simple. It was simple, not too many. But now you have title for everything. The director of the hygienic department of the city of Ljubljana is a garbage man. He's driving garbage cans. And that's okay. But, you know, why to give it such a fancy title? People hide behind titles everywhere. It's a big business to print visit cards. You know, yeah. And they study. Doctor, doctor. You know, and then they have this PhD and titles everywhere. And at the end you meet just a complete confused man who can hardly tie his shoes. I recently heard the geniuses of the 20th century, all these famous professors and this. And then somebody made a research into their lives. You know, it's a collection of psychopaths, you know. Very specific people. You know. Mr. Einstein, he wanted to have a sex even with his niece. You know, people of this kind of caliber. That's described in Bhagavad Gita. You know, they are, what somebody knows, the designation, they are gifted. You know, they have a gift, but the rest is just a rascal. You know, they are gifted, they got some ability, but the rest is just a rascal. The whole academic world is full of this. There's no formation of character. That's actually what is defined as education. Nothing of this. It's just anybody, it's just, oh. And it's all geared towards development of technology, gizmos, who increase our sense gratification. You know how you can increase your sense gratification? You can tickle yourself with a goose feather, like under the chin. It feels really good. And this is also, it's a very cheap way how to increase sense gratification. You don't need these digital gizmos who will just give you the idea, now you can really enjoy. But actually, what are you enjoying? Just pushing buttons. That's actually what you're enjoying, you're pushing buttons. And then, you know, and then you have the virtual games and big business. You know, you can be anything on the internet. You can assume any identity you want. As if there would be now enough that we are already illusioned by this identity we have now. They have to enlarge the scope of names only. So we didn't came to Krishna consciousness for that. You know, the game, who is who. You know, well, I'm listening. Prabhupada didn't give too many titles. Yes, there are titles. There's hierarchy, there's positions, but just to make things functionable. And, you know, something has to function. When people come together, there has to be some function. So that's okay. I can give you a wonderful letter from Prabhupada describing the managerial structure of this movement. It's fantastic. I don't have it here right now, but it's a memorandum Prabhupada dictated. His servant wrote it down and sent it to all the temples. Exactly describing the purpose of this movement. You know, no need of enhance or making progress in the name of titles, designations. No, just keep things simple. And then the most important thing, and that's a beautiful thing at the end, Prabhupada writes, he said, it is the duty of every leader. I don't want to sound too controversial, but it's directed especially to GBC. You know, always encourage everybody to be engaged in devotional service along his propensities and his abilities, to the maximum ability possible. That takes quite a personal approach. Everything is personal. And titles make things impersonal. It's not the title, it's the person. Sometimes we forget the person and we get hooked up on the title. A title is a designation. I mean, the title remains, the persons can change. You know, it's like Indra. Indra is actually a title. There can be different Indras, they're changing. You know, yeah. Sometimes there is even no Indra. So Krishna himself has to become an Indra, just to fill the post in, because it's needed for the management. So, you know, I can give you now lots of quotes from Prabhupada which are quite... Prabhupada said, actually, you know, none of you is a sannyasi. He said, but we need sannyasis. When you preach Vedic culture, you need, when you have... Prabhupada said, it's like in an army. When you fight a war, then you need some officers, some generals, this, you know. So Prabhupada gave an example. He said, it's like when you have no officers in the army. So they line up the soldiers and they go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you are an officer. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you are an officer. Because you need some. Prabhupada, that's how I gave you sannyas. Now it was not that simple. It was, these devotees exhibited actually great preaching potential. That was actually the qualification. You know, they actually were very inspired to preach, because sannyas means to preach. If you don't preach, then what's the use of this? What's the use? Prabhupada gave exactly definition to all this, exactly purpose to all this. But it's the nature, you know, of institutions. You know, I had the benefit when I joined this movement, there was no institution. Yeah, there was ISKCON. Who was ISKCON? Just a bunch of guys sleeping on a loft, you know, going on Sankirtan. That was ISKCON. And if you didn't go on Sankirtan, you were not ISKCON. Bye bye. There was no idea even what else to do. There was nothing else. But already then it started, yeah. There was, you know, who is the best on Sankirtan? You know, well, that can be changed. I was 4 or 5 years the best in ISKCON on Sankirtan. And I started to get attached. Always. You know, we had, like we had a, in Germany, we had a function that whoever was the best that week distributed most books, he could do the Mangalartik to the deities. So before the Sankirtan results were read, you already knew who was the first one, because he was on the altar in the morning in Mangalartik. And I had no idea. I'm not a pujari until today. I mean, I have such admiration for pujaris. I have no idea. I'm not a really brahmanical person, so I just don't know. I never came close to it even. So, but we had a really amazing pujari. It was one of the first really amazing pujaris in ISKCON. He was just made like pujari. So he was on a level we could not understand how what he's doing there on the altar. He was actually here in this country also. Anyway, and then he was just, you know, doing his puja, and then I was supposed to do the puja on Sunday morning. I told him, I have no idea, you know, and he looked at me and he was smart enough not to teach me much because I'm hopeless. So he just looked at me in a compassionate look and he was going, that's okay. You see these things on a plate here. So then he described me, what shall I pick first and second and third. And I said, what shall I do? And he said, well, just point to the details and make, you know, like 7 circles. And then you point to the devotees, make 3 circles. It was just in the morning, just in an altar, he told me this. And I said, yeah, but you are chanting all these mantras in between. And he said, look at me, just chant Hare Krishna. You know, that was his instruction. And then I said, but I'm not pure enough. He said, you went the whole week on Sankirtan, you are purified enough. That was the logic those days. So I was there on the altar, you know, offering the Gilam to Madna Mohan, you know, and then I offered the Gilam to the devotees, to my opponents, you know. Yeah, I was 22 years old, you know. You know, so, and then I was not the first one. I got sick, I was always, and the young ones were coming up and they were just taking over, and you sit there in a bag, and on the place number 6, Manidhara Das, and you go, okay. You know, it's changing. All everything is changing. And it's actually, when it's changing for the better, it's only good. You know, there was a young passion once, and yeah, they look at me like, what is this old guy sitting here? You know, so All this is coming to everybody. We are going to grow old. Physically less efficient, even Srila Prabhupada showed us that there is always a way to get more energy out of this body. Actually, that cannot be imitated. It is documented Srila Prabhupada was acting way, way beyond the abilities of any human being. Impossible to follow his schedule. Can you imagine his servants? They were young boys, you know, basically young people. He wore them out after every 3 months. It was finished. There was only a few like Harisauri Prabhu and who could prevail in that regime, following and traveling with Prabhupada, just physically spoken. They were finished. I spoke to one of his servants. He said, after serving Prabhupada day and night for 3 months, you know what I did? He finally realized I'm finished. So he dismissed me. And you know what I did? I traveled to my parents and I slept for a whole week. I was finished. And Prabhupada kept on traveling, preaching, you know, answering mail, everything. Following his schedule. In that body, in that age, after heart attacks, you know, it's completely beyond our imagination. It's pure spiritual power. So that cannot be imitated. I mean, we just, you know, we can try to follow to some degree. So this is what we learn from Bali Maharaj. You learn from the four fathers, but spiritual ones, in a terms of detachment, in a terms of spiritual inspiration. This is called senior, the one who inspires us most spiritually. That's called senior. And it could be a small child, he's still senior, because he's ahead. He's senior in enthusiasm. He is senior in inspiration. He is senior in detachment. He is senior in following the mission of the spiritual master, fulfilling the purpose of the mission of the spiritual master. That's actually the definition of seniority. That's not the age. It's age. Yeah, it's like, and Krishna consciousness is not a place you get a medal here, no. This is not. Sometimes, yeah, a little etiquette would be not out of place. Kamis have that. I remember one devotee getting married, ending up working in a bank, and she told me, you know, when I came in a bank, it was a well-established bank. So they had a big plate on a wall in the entrance with all the previous bank directors. You know, yeah, as a kind of offering, parampara of the bank directors. You know, she said, I almost start to cry when I saw this. But we could do a little bit better by recognizing the service of a devotee. It would be expected, following in a footstep of Bali Maharaj. It's not a question of worship. No devotee wants to be worshipped, really. It's annoying. You know, actually devotees always think, I remember when I tried to worship one of my godbrothers, he looked at me and said, are you trying to kill me? You know, he considered this an attack. Because I gave him the chance to get puffed up. You know, and he said, yes, take it easy. Yeah. I have a sannyasi friend, you could say, who is far superior in spiritual advancement as me. I know that. I know that. But seeing me going, Maharaj, and, you know, Maharaj this and Maharaj that, he grabbed me like this. I had really blueprints, blue marks here. And he said, he shook me like this. He said, hey, listen, we are God brothers. So this Maharaji, Maharaj, there, we are first God brothers, okay? So if you see me falling in Maya, you have to shake me like this. And we became a big friends. Because that's the meaning of friendship. It's not this, oh, ooh, ah, and he goes to hell, you know. That's not friendship. I remember that from the Brahmacharya days. We used to really help each other. You know how? By waking each other up. Sometimes quite ruthlessly, I have to say. It can be done better. But there was a concern. Hey, Prabhu, this is Maya coming. And this was well meant. This was really, there was concern. Please, let's help each other not fall in Maya like this. Nowadays it would be considered emotional abuse. Prabhu, you are emotionally abusing me. I don't feel simply very good in your presence. Well, I don't feel good in your presence either. So who is abusing more? And then we can discuss, okay? Yeah, of course. We didn't came here to Krishna consciousness to polish our false egos. You know. Oh, you are so great, you are so beautiful. And then he's gone. This is a, you know, the rectification. This is a hospital. In a hospital, doctors don't come in. Of course, they do that. Just to not upset the patient, but actually what they want is to introduce the medicine. So they go, hello, how are you? Are you looking better? Even he was almost dying, you know. So they can tell him that, but then the purpose is to introduce the medicine. This is the amazing example of Srila Prabhupada. On one side, he was very kind, very, you could... Some interpreted it as being very liberal. Prabhupada said, I'm not liberal. I'm introducing the medicine. And those who actually got the real mercy, oh, they have sometimes very tough memories, you know. It's when you got really Prabhupada's mercy, you know, that was serious. I remember one of his servants telling me, you know, he was in Mayapur. In the morning, Prabhupada was sitting on a bed chanting in his room in Mayapur. And he was cleaning his room. And Prabhupada said, you have to clean this bucket here, like this. And he was chanting Hare Krishna. No, like this. And then there's this Bhagavatam on a table. You have to put it on a shelf. And you can open the window. And then the floor is still dirty. And he closed the door. Why are you not closing the door now? And the floor is still dirty. And the Bhagavatam, I told you to put it on the shelf. And by the way, did you cook something already? Yeah? And he was, yes, Prabhupada, yes, Prabhupada, yes. And then Prabhupada said, the door is still open. And the floor is still dirty. Yes. And Prabhupada speeded up at this. And he brought him to the point, he was standing Bhagavatam in one hand, the broomstick in the other. And he put the Bhagavatam on the shelf, was going, Prabhupada! Then he just fell down, made under what? Prabhupada got up from the bed, he said, you are useless. And then he walked out. It's heavy for the first ego, you know. It was really heavy. And sometimes when you get the real mercy, that's where it comes. And we all need sometimes somebody to tell us how, what kind of foolish fools we are. Actually, an intelligent person, he will instinctively seek somebody like this. But the choice is on our side. You cannot, you know, it's up to you. But the intelligent person will always seek, you know. I don't usually quote karmis much, but there's one gentleman which is definitely, Prabhupada would have a good time with him. His name is Bernard Shaw. He lived almost 100 years before Prabhupada in a Victorian England. The man was completely out of place. You know, if I would give you some quotes from him, you would say, what is this guy? Was a hippie or what? And he was very sharp. He was Irish. Irish people like to make trouble a little bit, you know. It's Irish culture. Just, you know, put a little bomb. This is just history of Ireland is full of revolutions. You know, but warm-hearted people, but it's a revolution. So he said, the man I like most is my tailor. Because at least twice a week he's measuring me. And he's telling me how big I am. You see, this is an intelligent person. He will seek reflection. He doesn't trust his own judgment, really. Especially not the empiric one. Shastravi, that's another thing. That's permanent. But I think, I believe, in my opinion, can be okay, doesn't have to be okay. So one seeks reflection. And that comes quite naturally in association of devotees. You know, if somebody wants to polish his false ego, this nature of this movement is not made for that. This is not. And if you want the real quick seminar, the real quick cleanup, then book distribution is the best. You can go out on the street in whatever position you have in ISKCON. Whatever. You go on the street, you are the same. You cannot go to the people and tell, take a book. I'm a guru. Oh, there are some places they'll go, guru, you, peh! You know, they will specially oppose. You cannot go on the street and say, you must take a book, I'm a sannyasi. They go, yeah, I know these guys with the stick. You know, the Santa Claus is also one. You know, come on. Nobody takes anything of this seriously out there. You know, they have this Santa Claus and they have the sticks. Anyway. So people have no idea about these things. They cannot relate to these things. They cannot relate to these things. So we cannot impress them with these things. They can relate only to our true devotional qualities. And this is what Prabhupada said, purity is the force. This is what people can relate to. That's what can feel. And purity means what? You know, Prabhupada defined it as an absence of duplicity. There's no other purpose as to serve Krishna. Yeah. You can like me, you can kill me, or anyway, serve Krishna. There's no other agenda, there's no other purpose. And in order to do so, that's what people can feel. Because they think, oh, this is something, you know. That's the reason why there was a time people used to really join this movement, you know, a lot. You know why? And these devotees are by far not as educated, as experienced as we are today. But people used to join a lot. You know why? Because they were so purely surrendering to Prabhupada. They were so excited. I joined because of this. I had no idea of Prabhupada much. I was actually quite scared. The first picture of Prabhupada I saw, I never saw it again. It was somebody took a picture of Prabhupada sitting, just half body exposed at the window, and the light comes from below. And these veins and everything is very exposed, you know, illuminated. And Prabhupada was very serious out of the window. I was going, who is this? I knew immediately, if I come close to this man, the fun is over. It's serious. This gets really serious. And I was like, oh, just by looking at the photo. So I asked devotees when I joined, I asked, you know, you are so ecstatic over Prabhupada, I don't feel yet such an ecstasy. I respect Prabhupada, but and they said, well, you follow his instruction? I said, yes. Then you love him. Simple. Simple. It was simple. I was going, yeah, that makes sense. If you love somebody, you have to follow his instruction, you know. That's simple. So this is actually what made people to join, to see this excitement and this ecstasy of these devotees. Everybody was just talking about Prabhupada without even explaining to anybody who it is. It was emotional. You can say, but this is emotional. It's not very intellectual, isn't it? No, this is, there's a deep philosophy behind it. How to get excited by the spiritual master and follow him unconditionally. And devotees just exhibited that. It was visible, it was readable, people were excited. Yeah. And then anything else was secondary. You know. Yeah, you could, if you want to become really well respected, you're a big Mridanga player. Not everybody knew that. And there were really celebrities traveling around. I'm coming from a generation of devotees. When a sannyasi arrived in the temple, it was like a guru puja. He washed his feet, it was big cooking. I remember in Germany, Brahmananda is arriving. Bang! Because Brahmananda was known as the biggest prasadam consumer in ISKCON. So they cooked like 100 a preparation, and we put Brahmananda in the middle, and we just watched him eating. And he was talking, conversing, and he ate it all. Wow. So it was impressive. Wow. Now, of course, as a young bhakta, you tend to idealize people, and you naturally, because you don't have any more deeper insight. Later on comes the other challenge, when you start to see also the level of conditioning of that person. It's still there. And then one has to be very cautious, so you don't get flop over into the negative. You think, but you know, they are not so saintly. Look at him, he's snoring at night. And he eats too much halwa. And he is giggling like a woman. And he is gossiping. Oh yeah, well. Who is this? It's a dangerous point where you suddenly just flop over. And then one has to actually see what service that person is doing. Or not how conditioned the person is, but what is he doing about his conditioning. Therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, however sick, however conditioned, if he is following in a determined way the right process, he must be considered saintly. It's a hospital, you know. We are living in a hospital. And you don't expect in hospital everybody being healthy. That's kind of would not make sense, isn't it? So there are patients who are less sick, more sick. Some of them, they get kind of, you know, epileptic back falls, you know. Yeah, but, you know, suddenly they start to act very strange, you know, because the fever rising. But as long they have, they follow the chief doctor and they take nicely the medicine, they have to be all considered saintly and actually already healthy, because it's just a question of time. This is Krishna's logic. So we should not be on one side artificially sentimental. Oh, Vaishnava. Then Vaishnava does something really bizarre, you know. You go, what? What is this? And the other extreme is, they all have faults, I know this. This is not saintly person. That's actually offensive. So these two things, we don't have to do that. This is a scientific movement. And scientifically spoken, yes, we are all in a hospital. And even doctors get sick sometimes in a hospital, you know. When they deal with too many patients, they get infected. You know, so what do we expect? It's all infection out there. This was full of viruses, this world. So sometimes you get infected. But as long as we seek shelter at the right place, we take the right medicine, we are on a safe side, following the instruction, the prescription given by the chief doctor, then we are on a safe side. So that's how Prabhupada started this movement. People tell us, you know how fallen you are, you know what rascals you are, and who would join? But he was like, Prabhupada was in the beginning quite patient, really patient. He was like, yes, and the hippies were telling him all kinds of foul things, and I think even quite obnoxious things, you know. Yeah, what Prabhupada had to listen to, you know. And he was known in Vrindavan as one of the most strict sannyasis. And then he came into this field. You know how merciful Prabhupada was. I thought, yes, that's okay. But he never compromised. When they asked him, what are the rules and regulations? He said this. They were going, oh, One of the first lectures recorded, there was no ISKCON yet in this yoga studio, you know. At this lectures, actually the first lectures he gave were very long. They were not this 45 minutes lectures, they were just very long. And then Prabhupada comes to the point where he is describing the rules a little bit and the regulations, how to conduct bhakti yoga. And you could sense that the audience got a little bit uneasy. It was just this fat yoga ladies, you know, meditating and you know, yoga studio. So Prabhupada says something which really stuck in my mind. He suddenly says, ladies and gentlemen, I am not criticizing, I am analyzing. And this is actually the preaching mode. We are not going out there, you know, sinners, you know, here comes the punishment for you, you know, any preacher knows, you get nowhere with this. You make some remark on some discrepancy and bang, they will come back with the whole false ego they have. So it's such a wonderful statement. But we are analyzing. Yes, according to Shastra, Guru and Sadhu, according to these symptoms, my dear sir, you are an idiot. Prabhupada said it with such a detachment and so scientifically that people were just, I guess so, yeah. They couldn't oppose. And sometimes they did got upset. Prabhupada got people to the point where the man jumped up and said, I guess then I am a demon. And Prabhupada said, yes, you are a demon. Scientifically spoken, it's a demon. The devotees were amazed. Oh, that's how demons look like. Everything was revealed in Prabhupada's presence. But in a mood of compassion, in a mood of detachment, in a mood of this scientific movement, we are really making, what is science? Experiment, observation and conclusion. This is not excluded in Krishna consciousness. Experiment, we chant. Observation, hey, I'm becoming happy. And we conclude, this is good. The scientific process. So we observe. This man is acting like this. Analyzes. Guru, Shastra, Sadhu. In conclusion, he's an idiot. Simple. So if he keeps things that way, and keep this kind of scientific detached mood, then we are free of offense. There is no offense in this. Rather, that is an offense to say, it's all nice, all the same, all nice, nice, see? That's Mayavada. Prabhupada was himself accused of that, especially in India. Swamiji, you are not Samadarshana. You don't have an equal vision. Prabhupada said, no, I'm not Samadarshana. I'm distinguishing. And that's the problem. Kanishtha Adhikari cannot do that. He has no power of distinguishing. So he will all make it all cloudy. And even academically educated, he will sing, love and peace, and love and peace, and all one and the same, you know. And it sounds so nice, you know. Let's be all brothers and sisters, one and the same. And yeah. All you need is love. And then it's just a massive ignorance. And it's never the same. There will be always opposition. There will be always polarization. There will be always fractions. Let's be like that. Even one sense, Arjuna also said, oh, let it be. You know, the song, let it be, let it be, let it be. Let them all have it. I'm not going to fight. Let it be. It's Mahavada. Madhyamadhikara is distinguishing. Oh, that's a demon, that's a devotee, and that's the innocent one. Innocent means he can act like a demon, but he has no idea, he's misguided. So that's the preaching field. an Uttama Adhikari. He realized truly that everybody is part of Krishna, engaged in Krishna service one way or another. It's not to be imitated. And he will voluntarily come down to the level of Madhyama Adhikari to preach and teach others in this world. Because as an Uttama Adhikari, you don't preach and you don't teach. So this is what Prabhupada did. He voluntarily came down to that platform. As one of his servants said, "Prabhupada, you just rejected this disciple because he was such a nonsense." Prabhupada said, "No, I never reject anybody. It was just a lesson for him. Anytime he wants to come back, he's welcome." That's Uttamad. But still, a lesson has to be administered. Still, a teaching has to be administered. I know devotees sometimes are tired of this, especially managers. Management is such a thing. Oh, because you have to always discriminate. And always going in, out, you here, you there, not like this, like that, you know. And then devotees sometimes get tired and say, "Do I have to do this?" It's a little bit like the kings, you know. Being a king was sometimes so depressing, so they had to have some dancing girls or some gesture coming in to lighten up the mood. Because the whole day you sit there and going, "Yes, reward him, yes, kill him, yes, reward him, yes, kill him." It's you know, oh, you don't have to do this the whole day. Especially when you are a devotee. So then they had to some dancing girls, you know, and some fun, you know, and some gesture came in between just to lighten up the mood, you know. It's so depressing to be a king. I mentioned yesterday that the management is not a really exciting service, you know. It's like you must be super attached to go, "Yeah, that's my kingdom." Really? In ISKCON, everybody is a volunteer. Anybody can stand up any time and go, "You know what, do it yourself," and walk out of the door. Anytime. Then you are the king. "Where are you going?" You know, he's going because he doesn't want to stay. It's as simple as that. So kings have two things. They have money and police. We don't have any money and we don't have any police. We can only preach. That's the only thing we can do. So this is the nature of a devotee. So, following the examples of those who truly demonstrated Krishna consciousness, we can get inspired with a healthy dosis of introspection. There's some questions or points, because I don't want to prolong this.
Why the devotee not have question?
Well, that can have various reasons. I can give you some. They are sleeping. You know. You can sleep with open eyes in Bhagavatam class. Or that's usually not the case. Or there's no time enough to think over these things. Or they are just, you know, want to think over it. And so what? There's no question, okay? Prabhupada was, of course, he was provoking questions. If nobody had a question, he asked a question. Just to stir up the exchange, you know. But we have to also accept one thing, that sometimes devotees don't have questions because they are busy. Everybody already thinks, okay, is he finished? Or now I have to do this and I have to do that. So then that's okay. I was manager long enough, you know, to know that living in a temple means you are like in a machine. There's things to be done. And one of the driving forces in the temple, the main forces, the deities. Pujaris, they are like, okay, they're on clock. Pop, 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 pop. Everything is on the clock. Which is very good, because then our mind gets regulated. The worst thing is when you have too much time. In Krishna consciousness, the more serious you are, the less time you have. Krishna is arranging such a thing. There's always one man missing and there's too little time. This is life in a temple. Stress. Sometimes new devotees get really confused, you know. They think, you know, I came to Krishna consciousness to be peaceful. I was running like crazy before I joined this movement. Nowadays, not many, but some. Now I come here, I want to chant and meditate about Krishna. And it's like, bap, 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 bap. You think, what is this? It's worse, like in a karma world, you know. Tick tock clock, pop, 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 pop. Alarm clock. It starts right away in the morning. And, you know. And it goes, pop, 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 pop. You're saying, this is spiritual life. No, this is spiritual life. To come out more of the world of ignorance. Because actually in the material world, what they define as peace, it's actually basically a mode of ignorance very often. He's so peaceful, he's just sleeping all day. He's relaxed. He's equally exposed to everybody. He's not a disturbed person, he's very peaceful, because he doesn't know one damn thing. You know, he's so ignorant that nothing is disturbing him anymore. That's peace in the material world. He's so intoxicated that he's just... But of course they are not peaceful. Underneath, it's an immense deal of agitation, which comes out in form of a war sometimes or something like this. That's the peace. I used to laugh in the hippie days. There was a peace movement, you know, hippies. Peace, which was defined as unrestricted sex, unrestricted intoxication. And there was even a slogan... Let's make babies, no war. You know, instead of war, you make babies. Well, those who have babies, they know it's not peace. There's no peace in making babies. If you want some peace, or if you want to end all your peace, get a baby. You know? The mother is not sleeping, you know. You know, and the father is working. Oh, the baby has to eat. That's peace. And the baby is running. I have to protect it. And it's a constant state of anxiety. And so we can survive this. Krishna covers us so nicely with such an illusion. We go, oh, it's so nice. I have a wonderful daughter, but I can tell you, growing up, and I was heavily involved, because I was day and night with her, because it was just needed. This devotees get children, they have no relatives, no help, nothing, and everybody around in Maya, it's quite a demanding thing, you know. And you don't become more Krishna conscious from the child, not really. Oh yeah, it's teaching you renunciation. Because as soon as you want to eat something, it wants to eat it too. And then just, there's nothing. If you would have a grown-up person living in your house in a regime of a baby, you would call police. Hey, hello, there's somebody running around, passing stool on my floor here. Then he eats everything. I have to pay for him, and then he leaves. That's called childhood. Sounds very negative. No. It's a quite interesting experience. I don't regret I went through this, because it's very educational. Ramacharis have no idea. They just think, I have a problem. I need a new toothbrush. Really. As a grihastha, you can find yourself so busy you hardly find the toothbrush. You have hardly time to brush your teeth. there anyway. So yeah, this is okay. This here it's beautiful. Here it's just, devotees have eyes open and this. Sometimes you come to places. And I used to tease in such places. You just go. That you don't ask for question. You just go prasadam, and then everybody wakes up. Suddenly, just no one's sleeping. Because I saw devotees sleeping in a lecture. I never saw devotees falling asleep while accepting prasadam. And suddenly this is awakening time. That's okay. But nowadays we can say, just to live in a temple, yes, that requires a lot of... Prabhupada said it from the beginning. He said, this requires a lot of qualification. No lazies and no crazies. That was the first condition for Prabhupada. And then you have to, you know, be engaged all the time. All the time. All the time. Engaged. 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 So it's either the temple or Sankirtan like this. And then there's a third regime where you'll be always engaged, and it's called Grihastha Ashram. Arjuna also wanted peace, you know? No, there was no peace. His peace was killing everybody. Very peacefully. Because he was acting directly under Krishna's instruction. That's called peace. And sometimes he almost died, you know, in the line. It was very dangerous situations. But he was very... Krishna is here. I'm doing my duty. When you read Mukunda Prabhu's book, there's an incredible scene there, how Mukunda Prabhu arranged a preaching program in San Francisco for Prabhupada. It was a catastrophe. Prabhupada came in a flat, and there was just these hippies lying around. They practically had sex in front of him. And then, and Prabhupada sit down, and he was chanting, and they hardly, you know, stopped what they were doing. Then Prabhupada completely stopped kirtan and he gave a completely standard lecture. Like, you know, there's a big audience. But they were all drugged and stoned, and it was a disaster. So then after the program, they walked through the streets of San Francisco with these hippies lying around, and the sun was going down, and they were all... everybody. It was a ghastly scene, actually. And in presence of Prabhupada, Mukunda realized, what the hell this place is. And then he looked at Prabhupada, embarrassed about this, you know, mismanaged program. Prabhupada was beaming with ecstasy. And he was shocked. He said, Prabhupada, this program was terrible, isn't it? And Prabhupada just looked at him and said, it's very nice here. He was completely confused. He said, what this? We just come from a horrible program, walking through hell, and he goes, it's very nice here. What is this? Then he realized. Prabhupada was completely in ecstasy because he was engaged in the mission of his spiritual master and he fulfilled its purpose. That's where his happiness came from. He was in the right place, doing the right thing. Finally, after so many years of waiting, Prabhupada got that instruction and he was, I think, 25 years old. Before he got into action, he was 65. And Prabhupada said, every day I could remember that instruction. Every day. Go and preach to English-speaking people. Prabhupada said, how will I do that? I have family. And finally it happened. All this we can learn from. Sometimes we just have to strive and pray and wait, and then when Krishna thinks, okay, now is the time, things suddenly start to happen. So patience is also required. And even if we don't succeed fully, well, we did our job, at least something in this lifetime, it was worth of it, you know. be autobiographic, but if I would look back on the years of management I did, it's not very inspiring sight. Whatever I managed, somebody ruined. Seriously. I can give you a clear record. But I still think, oh, I did my service, so what? However, whatever books I distributed, oh, that's the thing nobody could damage. That remains. Therefore, book distribution is so wonderful. It's a permanent contribution. They are there, these books. And what they will do and how they will preach, that's not up to us. So Krishna says it's never in vain. We are never in vain. It's never a failure. And if I come to a place like this, which to maintain is by no means simple and easy. In a small country like this, but you know. Each single one of these bricks and of this old puts and stone was struggled for by generations of devotees. Somebody had to collect for it. Somebody had to maintain it. For one simple reason, so people can come here and hear about Krishna. All these devotees who were part of it, they got their credit. And those who are still here maintaining, trying to prevent that the whole thing falls apart. I'm here not even one day, I can give you a list of destruction here. What has to be done and this, it's unlimited. But that doesn't matter. The fact is the place exists. People can come and hear about Krishna. And don't worry, they are not impressed. If you would put here gold leaf on a ceiling and a bunch of expensive chandeliers, it will not improve the preaching. Rather, some people would get envious. So it's okay like this. Don't go for gold leaf on a ceiling and big chandeliers. We had it already. It doesn't improve the preaching. What's the use to have here wonderful chandeliers and not these funny bulbs, you know, and then you have a bunch of miserable people down, you know, underneath. That's not preaching. I joined this movement in a very, very simple circumstances, but it was packed with ecstatic people. I couldn't care less if they live under a tree or even al puja. First time the pujari showed me the deities, he opened the curtain and he said, those days it was very simple. Whoever came, the curtain went open. When he left, they closed the curtain. So I was in this little room, there was little Madna Mohan deities. And he opened the curtain and he closed the curtain, he asked me, so, how were they? And I said, who? I couldn't see one damn thing. It was just a bunch of flowers and I didn't see anything. But when the first ecstatic Sangitan devotee walked in the door, looked at me, was going, Sangitan Krishna! Well, that I could see. That was unavoidable. That was very impressive. So that's the basis of preaching. It's us living in Krishna consciousness. That's what people can see.
Provide for your family with the book distribution?
Tried for a little while. We spoke about this yesterday. It takes lots of energy, lots of physical output, lots of time. It's practical. Let's face the reality. And the books have to be cheap, so you can make some profit. I know very few devotees who can do that. Those I know, they still have a job aside or whatever. They don't do it full time. And if a grihastha, maintaining himself by book distribution when he has no children. It's very practical. I mean, the grihasthas sometimes should really get a realistic overview what they are entering. If somebody gets brahmachari, gets married, you should know what he's going for. It's almost predictable. Or your grandfather was one of the biggest, you know, alcohol producers in Slovenia. He died and you inherited the money. It's also a way to do that. Then you can distribute books. There are devotees who got a good inheritance. So, but not everybody is so lucky. I lived also very much from inheritance. The father of my wife died. We came to Czech Republic, where the money transferred from Sweden to Czech. I became a multimillionaire. Cheap life. So it gave me for 10, 12 years breathing time. I could take care of my daughter full time. We bought him a house, old house, but. And I could still travel and preach. And then I did some book distribution, I mean, of course, also. So that was, I knew this is a very special chance. Let's use it. Fortunately, my wife agreed. So my daughter grew up in a mobile home. Maybe some of you can remember, I parked out here.